Good morning. What I want to talk about under the general heading of cybercrime is really a large array of things. Cybercrime is an issue that hits the headlines every day. Every day I hear about seminars by consultants and how we can cope with this phenomenon of the enormous spread of what is generally called cybercrime. It's concerned with the misuse or the dubious use of technology. It embraces a very wide range of activities, fraud, scamming, hacking, infringements of intellectual property rights via, for example, file sharing, plagiarism. Most of these are considered by our established systems as being crimes or wrongdoing, although some of these have to be questioned, some of these judgments have to be questioned. To what extent is file sharing a crime as against a misunderstanding of business models? Also included are the wide range of antisocial activities on the margin of legality, such as pornography, invasions of privacy, knowledge manipulation, such as, for example, which comes from the kind of things we heard in the first talk, the use of these, the dissemination of confidential information, for example, WikiLeaks, knowledge hiding. If you look at, for example, the mafia, they use knowledge in a very different way. They have the principle of omerta, silence. So that's another form of information using it. The misuse of model-based systems such as automatic trading. There's evidence that much of the way the volatility of markets nowadays is due to the use of automatic trading methods, where everybody uses the same similar algorithms, and as a result of that you get amplification of systems. And I want to draw attention to the knowledge paradox. We've talked about the information society. We've talked about the knowledge society. Castells talks about the information society and so on. The knowledge society. And the implication is that we're in a society which is gaining knowledge, which has the means of gaining knowledge, yes. But if we actually look around us, we see more what Thompson calls counter-knowledge. All around us we see, if we sample populations on what their beliefs is and what their knowledge is, we get climate change deniers, we get believers in conspiracy theories, and the same technology which spreads knowledge spreads unknowledge, counter-knowledge. And I think we're getting counter-knowledge spread at a rate, using the social media, for example, much faster than previously was possible. So some of the advantages we talked about before have also got their counter-advantages. The disadvantages, and so we have a knowledge paradox. These are problem areas whose study crosses many disciplinary boundaries, ranging from ICT studies, certainly, sociology, as we've seen, economics, criminology, very rarely brought into the picture, but there are people who have a better understanding of that, and perhaps, coming out of this, even quantum mechanics. Now, these are major concerns to practitioners, policymakers, lawyers, management, the public at large, and academics, reflected by the headlines they attract. And perhaps we can answer this, are they the difference which makes a difference? The fact that we have this underground things. Traditional studies of ICT have been dominated, and I think this is in academia, by the notion that the technology exists to better humanity via improved productivity, can call it the business group paradigm, or by improving the quality of working and social life, the humanistic paradigm, or by building the global brain as a way of enhancing our existence. Questionable, of course, as we've seen. But teaching and research has been dominated by the values implicit in the first of these, particularly the first of these, with shareholder value being the chief criterion for measuring success. This is true very largely through academia, and academia does it partly because it's financed by the people who benefit that way. The humanist paradigm is also there, and we find it in departments of sociology and so on, but it is far less dominant in the kind of studies which we are talking about here. If you look at the real world and real world behavior, then we notice that there's a very wide range of values which actually actuate people and which do not conform to the values espoused by the traditional political and academic communities. And we have to note that some of the most successful entrepreneurs and innovators do not share these espoused values. To take pornography as an example of innovation and successful business models, pornography is still very dominant in the internet, in the traffic of the internet. At one time, it was over 50%. It's probably less than that, though the amount of actual pornography being used and transmitted through the internet is actually increasing, though as a proportion of the total, it's falling slightly. But it's still very, very high. So despite the undoubted success of, we know very little about them. Do we know the Steve Jobs of the pornography enterprises? Who are the leaders in that things? What do we know about them? We know very little. And yet it's one of the very important aspects of the way the internet is used. And they have made some of the most interesting innovations. For example, in the use of the internet for micro payments, for relatively small amounts frequently paid. So all over the place we find their innovations. Sometimes their names hit the headlines, as when the fraud practiced by Enron was exposed. Are these different value systems, which we don't talk about very much, the difference that makes a difference? They certainly make a difference. I don't think one can talk about the difference that makes a difference. There are so many things. We get mixed messages. Outright criminality such as fraud offends all but those engaged in it. Pornography is a grey area. Where do we place WikiLeaks? To its defenders, an open society providing information any certain citizen is entitled to, or is it a dangerous purveyor of confidential information? Is Assange our hero or is he our villain? We have to consider where we stand in relation to these things. What about the use of malware? We all know what malware is, the Trojan horses, the worms, which invade our software. If it's used as the Stufax worm was used by the American and Israeli military to disable the Iranian centrifuges for the nuclear program, is that something which we should approve of or not? Or is that as criminal as the malware which invades my computer, my laptop, and which may, for all I know, be sitting here? When I had my laptop detoxified, they found 52 Trojan horses, worms, and things in it. I imagine most of us have similar things. So what I'm hoping for is that the study of the dark side the research is dominated by reactive studies or the deliberate misuse of the technology. And by definition, reactive studies are always going to be behind the innovators. Just a very quick example, talking to some bankers who are concerned with phishing and all sorts of things like that, they say it takes them on the average 6 months to react to a new form of fraud. So by being reactive, we're not going to win. We're always going to be losing. There's very little research which attempts to understand the value and business models of the dark side enterprises. And without understanding this understanding of the difference, the dark side will always run rings around us, those who value technology for the benefits it can provide for all of us. Such studies have to be interdisciplinary if they're to succeed in throwing light on the dark side. So that's my plea, that we don't forget this dark side, that we examine this dark side to learn what we can learn about it, and also to consider seriously our judgments on it. The previous speaker asked about judgments about the global brain. We have to make judgments about where we stand in relation to some of the issues. And I think we can fit some of that into your hologram model. Thank you.